Hello and welcome to the 17th episode of the Extreme Sports Performance Podcast. My name is Ryan Blake, I'm the founder and CEO of Extreme Sports Performance. In this episode, I'm speaking to Dave Hembra. Dave is the lead strength conditioning coach at Sheffield Hallam University and also the head coach at Hallam Barbour Weightlifting and Strength Club. In this episode, I ask him the questions I ask all my guests: who he is, what he does, where has he come from and what has he done along the way, what are the key moments from his career so far, what are his top areas of interest, what are the most valuable things he's learnt, who are his top influences, what are his top resources for information, what are his top sports performance exercises and or drills, what are his top pieces of advice in life, exercise and or sport, and finally, where can people find him? We continue to freestyle a little bit in between questions and towards the end as normal. Hope you enjoy listening to this one. Here we go. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the Extreme Sports Performance Podcast. Please, could you start by just telling everyone who you are and what you do?
My name is Dave Hembra. I'm the lead strength and conditioning coach at Sheffield Hallam University. I'm also the founder and head coach Hallam Barbour Olympic Weightlifting Strength Training Club.
Awesome. So could you give us an insight, Dave, to what a day, a week, a month looks like in your world when you're coaching?
I can try. It's pretty random. I wear a few hats. I've started referring to the plates I've spin recently as plates of jelly. So there's a few different bits and pieces I get up to on an average day or week. My role at Hallam University is the lead S&C coach. Sits within a research centre, and so my colleagues that I work with are all researchers proper, whereas I am more as a consultant. So my job is in and around some research, but maybe getting out and delivering strength conditioning services. I do that within the university, internally towards the university sports teams, and we deliver that through an internship, which has got a good reputation and had a good successful history in producing high-level practitioners. I also deliver some consultancy to some elite sport groups. Less of that at the moment, but I still work with British Diving, British Weightlifting. More of my work time at the university has taken up now delivering community strength and conditioning, less for sport performance, more for social and often well-being purposes. And aside from that, I also run the Hallam Barbour Weightlifting Club, which sort of bridges across to some of the activities I do in the university. How the average day or average week looks, well, it's a breakdown of meetings with people to review what's going on, or plan things that are coming up, direct delivery, and coaching, and then also mentoring and supporting the coaches and the people who lead the programs that I manage either within the university or within Hallam Barbour. I'm more of a people person than a paper person, so a lot of my week is taken up with face-to-face and contact. I'm really keen on networking, building a strong, close network, and I do put a lot of my time into face-to-face and meetings as well. Perhaps more than shit on an average week, because there's always paperwork and admin piling up, but that's life, isn't it?
Exactly. We all love admin, whether we have to do it or not. It's always going to be there at the end of the day, but I completely agree with you in it. Face-to-face meetings or face-to-face contact is always preferable, especially in the coaching world. I just feel that you're a little bit more there in the room than you are sat behind a computer. It's a little bit better quality communication, I find. So could you just give us an insight, Dave, to where you've come from and what you've done along the way that's led you to where you are now?
I come from Devon, I come from the southwest. I moved to Sheffield in 1998, half a lifetime away from me now, to do my degree in sports science. I studied sports therapy, rehabilitation. I did a vocational qualification in sports therapy and massage. And during my early time in Sheffield at university, I was working in the student gym, I was supporting the student teams. I was playing sport myself, rugby, and doing some martial arts. That led me on throughout my undergraduate, my graduate programs to work more specifically with teams, this is as the strength and conditioning industry was starting to evolve. The UK SCA was sort of founded early 2000s. I was a founding member of that. And so it's only recently really we got the terminology strength and conditioning coaches, which is what I do now. And as that industry sort of evolved, I've moved left. I've moved away from sport performance, although I've had some times at Olympic Games, I've had some times at Commonwealth and world champion athletes. And I tend to spend my time now trying to do socially good projects with people who aren't training to play sport and to be in opposition, train and have a better quality of life and more enjoyable, healthy life.
So what would you say key moments are from your career as a coach?
So there's a phrase that I was introduced to through Steve Jobs. I think it's an American phrase. You were saying earlier your wife is from California before we start recording, and perhaps you can tell me that the origins of happenstance are from America. Happenstance is the theory that you can't join up the dots in advance. So it's only looking back, you look at these sort of significant points. And I think with what I've done and the decisions I made, places I've been lucky enough to work or things I've been involved in, it's all come down to me approaching the situation in the right way at the right time, being personable, and often not pushing too hard or trying to leverage a situation for personal gain or financing, just having good values and morals and dealing with the person in front of you in the right way. A couple of examples for that. At university, I started training the university volleyball team. That led to some opportunities with the national volleyball team at a junior level. At a student, international level, going to the USAs, my first sort of international experience in multi-sport games. I didn't know further down the line that would give me an opportunity to work with the GB women's volleyball team for the 2012 games. I was just training some people that I knew, helping them get better. Back in the day when I was a university student, and I had no idea that those decisions and the time I spent learning to coach volleyball athletes would lead me to the Olympics Games. Another example within that is I had a friend who worked in boxing. He asked me if I could help a boxing coach out and just sort of give an insight to strength and conditioning. I said, yeah, I'd do that. I enjoyed a couple of sessions with Dominic Ingle, who's the head trainer at the Ingle Gym, and there was some money available, and there's a sort of foundation charity which the guy I knew was willing to pay me from. I said, no, don't worry about it, don't pay me, I don't need any money for that. I really enjoyed doing it, he's a good contact. And where these two stories link up is on the last day of the 2012 games, I was just walking out the athlete village up the steps, and I had a phone call. It was from Eddie Hearn, who was asking me to work with some of his boxers and some of the Ingle stable. And if I can, Dom Ingle and sort of leverage a few quid from my time when I first met him, perhaps that decision wouldn't have been made. So following the 2012 games, I worked a few years in professional boxing. We took Kell Brooks to champion level. So there are a couple of sort of significant events, but the basis of that is behaving appropriately in the right way at the right time. By person.
I completely relate to that, Dave, as well. I think one of the good opportunities I've had as well have been by luck, but I think it's been self-made luck just by being in the right place at the right time, but just being friendly, professional, humble and patient with everything. And those, even though things might not happen immediately, the good opportunities might come around straight away. I think they do come around eventually if you're patient with them, which is always nice. But I do know, and I see every day a lot of coaches or just sports professionals going at things gung-ho, expecting instant results and instant invitations, and I just think, I've been there before, it just doesn't work.
It takes time, doesn't it?
It does. All good things do, I think. There's seldom, I think, you can get great quality out of anything instantly. I think all things take a time investment. So with your current role, Dave, what would you say your top three areas of interest are at the moment, day to day?
Working in university, the HE sector's sort of changing. Strength and conditioning, it's become a very competitive marketplace in universities, and I've obviously got a role within the university where we're watching what's going on. I'm involved in some teaching. In fact, that's become more so recently. We launch strength and conditioning masters in September. So a lot of my time recently has been put into developing that course, getting validation, internal approval, setting that course up to launch. So that's the big change of my work at the moment. The strength and conditioning masters starts in September. It's an applied coaching master. We're not focusing on really heavy sports science and research basis. We were looking at developing practitioners and coaches, and we're linking that into the internship. So another part of my role, the way I spend my time, is mentoring and developing coaches. And I'll give you some examples shortly of coaches that come through our program and gone on to great things. Something I enjoy. The teaching in the classroom, not so much, but mentoring and developing coaches, absolutely. And then it's coaching myself. It's coaching my diving group, and managing the coaches who deliver the various programs that have the barbell. I'll talk specifically about Alan Barbell in a bit, if that's right.
Yeah, of course. It's
more than just a weightlifting club. We've got a whole lot of different products and programs, different demographics, different audiences. And that's perhaps what really excites me at the moment.
Brilliant. So, I mean, please feel free to come back to that any time. Over the entirety that you've been coaching, what would you say the most valuable things are you've learned?
Over the time that I've been coaching, I look and reflect on how I've changed and developed as a coach. For me, for yourself, I'm sure, and anyone at sort of age edging onto 40, you recognise the sort of personal journey you've been through, starting to understand yourself, starting to accept yourself, and then place the strength while working on your weaknesses. And I'm somewhat of an enigma in my role at the university. I sort of alluded to earlier, I don't do research per se, I'm not an academic. Very applied. You look at the people around me and their smart knowledge they've got, theoretical underpinning, or statistical and research methodology they can put into the work they do, and that's really not me. I'm much more person focused. So, some of the sort of lessons I've learned is to take time to understand myself, develop myself, invest in the strengths, and use them. And you know, the way I work, it tends to be build good relationships, taking time, develop an understanding, and having quite a broad approach. Pigeonhole myself into any one sort of methodology, or so I obviously lean towards weightlifting to a certain extent, and I'm a strength head. That's the approach I've got to. But we're all in development. We're all continuing to evolve. You know, I'm interested to see where the next steps and what I'm doing. Takes me, maybe that isn't to research, because some of the programs I work on do need some validation to take them to a further point.
So, as you mentioned beforehand, could you just give us a bit more of an insight to Hallam Barbell and what different things that go on there?
Yeah, absolutely. Hallam Barbell is a weightlifting club. It's affiliated to British Weightlifting. I was first introduced to Olympic weightlifting when I went through the UKCA accreditation. I was, as I said earlier, a founding member and one of the first 50 UKCA accredited coaches in the country. I went on from doing the UKCA accreditation to doing my British Weightlifting Awards. In fact, I'd applied for a role at the EIS, EIS Sheffield, where Tommy Yule was the lead strength and conditioning coach, and one of the practical assessments was in Olympic weightlifting. I blagged that I hadn't done much weightlifting at that point, and I really sort of fell short of the standard he was looking for your listeners that don't know Tommy Yule. He's a very well-known strength and conditioning coach. He's worked for the English Institute of Sport, UK Athletics. He's been performance director of British weightlifting, but he also won an Olympic weightlifting medal in the Commonwealth Games in Manchester. So me trying to blag my way through some Olympic weightlifting didn't go down well. That led me down a path to explore weightlifting and do more of it, to compete myself, and then start training others. I affiliated Hallam Barbell as a weightlifting club. I trained weightlifters for competition. I developed some coaches, And I found that I ticked a load of boxes that I never knew existed for my local community sports organisation in Sheffield in South Yorkshire. They wanted more clubs, they wanted more coaches, they wanted more people participating in sport. I also ticked the box for British Weightlifting, who wanted to develop more coaches, more participants, and more clubs too. And I realised that moving away from strength and conditioning at that point and focusing on being a legitimate coach in a sport, it was a really interesting transition where, as a strength and conditioning coach, I was partly responsible for the performance of the athlete on game day. But as a weightlifting coach, I was wholly responsible. I really liked learning to compete myself and then take lifters to competitions. We've had some success developing Olympic weightlifting competitors. Probably our best weightlifter at the club is Jenny Tong. She's a 55-kilo female lifter. She's got British records. She's competed internationally. Well up the road for Birmingham Commonwealth Games. But that has been a really enjoyable part from being a strength and conditioning coach into a weightlifting coach and developing a club. Lessons learned how to organise and administer a club to manage the health and safety, the safety effects. And as it starts growing, we start to deliver different products and programmes to different people. So at Allen Barbell, we don't just run the weightlifting programme. We run a kids' weightlifting programme we call Allen Barbell Bears. We've got an older adult training programme we call Strength for Life. And the cool part of that is our old age strengtheners sessions. We run sessions for women, women only, say, for women, coached by women, and that's called Power Bell. And I've got a program I run called Mindfully Strong, which is a mental health offer where we combine mindfulness and strength training, physical fitness for positive mental health. And these programs all fit very nicely into sort of Sport England's requirements of modern sport. It's a journey I'm learning, moving away from coaching athletes to coaching real people for real problems, whether that's women who social experience, older adults that want a better quality of life and to extend their life, or kids whose parents want them to develop a healthy basis of activity and a good relationship with training for later life. So that's the sort of things we do in Allen Barbell. That's the thing I'm really sort of concentrating on the moment to take forward in the future.
I will get the web links and the social media links from you later on. I'll put those in the show notes. So if any listeners want to check out more information, they can click directly on them. Who would you say, and this is the most interesting question for me, I ask all my guests, your biggest influences are on you today?
We've all had people, haven't we, who've nudged us along, given us opportunities or supported us or held us to account. I think the first guy that gave me a foot up and a leg into the industry was Nick Ward. Nick Ward is now the performance director at a place called Barton Health, which is an association with Altis over in Lake Tahoe in the States. Nick, at the time, he just finished working in professional football, the lead S&C coach for Sheffield Wednesday, and he was working at Hallam, Sheffield Hallam, that was a lecturer as a sort of health and wellness and sort of fitness lecturer. Nick saw me in the gym doing what I was doing, training all the student athletes, and he had an aspiration to turn some of the programs we ran at the university into what we now know as sort of the modern day internship model, which he'd studied in the States, in Canada, and further sort of Canadian models, something we could develop. So he picked me up and took me under his wing. He gave me my first full-time role as a strength and conditioning coach in this department I'm now in. But within 2 months of him appointing me and me having that job, got offered a role with Canadian bobsleigh and Bob Skelton as a performance director. So, he had sorted me out, it helped me, he believed in me, gave me a few opportunities, and then he left me. So he went across to Canada to do that role. That left me in a real difficult position of being young, inexperienced, but having a real significant role opportunity to continue to help me. But I had to find my own feet as well. So Nick Ward certainly he's been a real key influencer. As we have for a lot of people who might be listening to your show within the strength and conditioning world, certainly anyone that's worked with a talented athlete scholarship scheme, he left the seat coach there for a while. Yeah, so Nick's got to be the standout shout-out.
Well, I actually did a show with him a few months ago, and we discussed a lot about the work he does with mountain bikers, which I found really interesting, and a lot of our listeners gave really good feedback again about, with these very simple but concise and often quite humorous responses to questions. So if no one's heard that episode yet, check it out. It's in the on iTunes, Spotify and Stitcher. So if you needed to find out information, Dave, about something new, what would be your go-to? What would be your top resources to find that information?
Horizon scanning. Part of my nature is to have a very inquiring mind to quite a broad range of interest. I'm a big fan of Twitter. I like to tap the drop and watch Twitter opinions. I like to watch people who are smarter than me or more advanced in their careers or in slightly different careers from me, what they're saying, what they're sharing and posting. So I certainly say Twitter is a tool I use, not for self-promotion per se, but to share and gather information. I'm also pretty busy on mail lists, and I sign up to a lot of different mail lists. People who are that inclined. I've signed up to quite a lot of government updates, become quite interested in policy and strategy. I've got a little bit older and I've started to have to write policies for Alan Barbell and look at some more strategic stuff. So I'll always be looking at key organisational websites, look at structure, at board meetings and minutes. Any public organisation, legal requirement, they publish their board meetings, minutes online. And so I find myself looking at that sort of stuff sometimes, just to see what's being talked about, what's going on at the sort of top level within organisations. An example of that is the main funder for sport and physical activity in the UK, Sport England, Elite Sports, sponsored by UK Sport. But Sport England are our sort of participation and grassroots organisation. They release updates and information quite regularly. And they've got, like this Girl Can campaign. You can find all the original documents and information about this Girl Can and understand the sort of language, the measurement and the impact they're looking. And for the programmes I run, like Powerbell in this instance, I really sort of take that information on and try and align what I'm doing to local, regional and national strategy. I don't know whether that's a bit of an obscure answer for you, but digging into strategic documents on web pages or looking at minutes from meetings, it's quite an interesting way to pick up information, not through reading a book or a journal article or looking at a Google search, which I imagine what most other people say. I'll sort of share that with you, something a little bit different.
Much appreciated. That's definitely an alternative answer to what a lot of guests say, but I like it. I think you get a lot of value in looking at how other professions or organisations do things and how you might be able to apply similar systems and processes to your own practice. So I think, yeah, that's great. So the next question, Dave, I just wanted to see what your top sports performance exercises and or drills were. But obviously you work with such a different variety of athletes day by day. You can take the answer any way you want, really. Possibly looking at specifically at weightlifting or stuff you would do with divers.
In terms of training people, I tend not to have too much of a specific script.
Yeah.
What I find myself doing now more than perhaps what I once did was digging into the individual and their activities they currently do. So if I had a new athlete, say through the Talent Athlete Scholarship Scheme, TAS, rather than me carrying out a load of stereotypical assessments and measurements, holding them to account to a certain standard, I just ask them how they normally train, normally do, how do you normally work out, let's do that. And I really enjoy seeing what other people do and their experiences and then digging into understanding them a bit through that. Why do you do that? And how does it work for you? Or where did you get that exercise from? How long have you been doing that activity and how has it progressed? That would be my coaching. Let them lead. Probably something I picked up from Nick is to try to develop a independent athlete so that they're not dependent on me, that they gain knowledge and experience and understanding of how to train, rather than having to get every sort of set and rep and load prescribed directly by me. I'd probably be quite guilty of saying that I'm a key strength head, in terms of key exercises. I think everyone should squat or use a squat pattern. Tend to use some sort of Olympic lift, but that might be a dumbbell snatch or a dumbbell push press, within that sort of strength and power range. I do a lot of jumping. I use a lot of jumps, a lot of work to attenuate force as well, so altitude landings and catching single or double leg from height. So a program I'd write and normally have some sort of tasty warm-up that gets you quite sweaty, some sort of explosive exercise. We're moving to something technical, something strength-based, usually incorporating double and single legs and push-pull. I'd normally focus at the end on something either metabolic or some mobility, flexibility type activities, depending on that individual's need and how often they're training, how beat up they are. For your sort of audience, your extreme guys, I've trained some mountain bikers, I've trained some climbers, I've trained some sort of bizarre sports along the way. And the key thing for me is that training needs to match up to the requirements. And that's not just to fill a physical purpose, but it's to fill the time space that I have available and the headspace they want to achieve with their training. And what I know is that training works when it's done well, done consistently for a long period of time. And so the approach that I'd suggest your listeners take with their own training or training others, just to make sure that whoever's in front of them enjoys it, they're doing the things they want to do, that they enjoy and feel good from, because that's sustainable. And it's not 6 weeks that takes you from good to great. It's the first 6 months and then the 6 years you're following that. That's really been a lesson I've learned with our divers that we train, who are a delicate bunch. They're very flexible, they're very mobile, they've got a high body awareness, and it's an athletic sport, so they're judged on how they look and how they move. And what I found with my divers is that I want them fresher, I want them feeling good in the water, in the pool, which means I don't put too much load on them, I don't push them too hard, too heavy. If I'm honest, I could have made them a lot stronger and a lot better in a much shorter space of time. But I've taken time for them to enjoy the training, understand the training, feel good from them not beating up, and take a little bit longer to get better. So it's more consistent, something that reaches a longer-lasting effect.
Excellent. Thanks for those insights. I've just got a question regarding diving, which is more of a personal interest. How would the divers go about approaching recovery to make sure they're fresh, ready to go, either in the gym or on the board?
Where my head went is, how would divers approach recovery differently from your other athletes? So sure, other than the fact that diving is quite an early specialisation sport, so we've got young guys and girls, sort of late 20s, it's the back end of the career of a diver. So you tend to find that they are a little bit fresher, a little bit more robust, but also a little bit more naive with what works for them, and maybe a little less diligent in some aspects. We know through experience that the best people who look after themselves the most, like we saw Tiger Woods a few weeks ago winning the Masters, it's those that have been in the game for a long time and know their body has been injured times and time out and understand how to manage those previous injuries or look after the body, understand the importance of corrective activities and recovery, rejuvenation activities to look after the body. So the divers, because they're a little bit younger, we're cautious with the training loads and the progression of the training loads. They're often going through teenage years into sort of early 20s. They're quite busy diving programs. Most of our divers in our junior elite programs probably train 20, 25 hours a week. So that's most days after school or college or transition into a full-time program where they've perhaps got two or three sessions a day. The nature of that training is that due to the volume, the intensity is always sort of pulled back a bit. It's really managed very delicately. So the best way, I'd say, for the divers, managing the recuperation, regeneration, is being sensible with the training loads and being sensible with the progression and always having some back-off weeks, every sort of 3 or 4 weeks. When I'm training, the divers particularly, but other athletes too, tend to work off a traffic light system, and I matched that up against the sports coach. Tom Owens is the local diving coach. Tom and I, we have recuperation weeks, green weeks. We have sort of amber weeks, which are sort of moderate odor intensity. And then we have some impact weeks, some red weeks. More often than not, what he's doing in his program is the inverse of what I'm doing in my program. So if he's got a red week, I'm on a green week. Very occasionally, we'll push at the right time in the right way and double up. So we'll both have red weeks and really drive the intensity and match with the volume they train. Or occasionally, you know, we know that we'll both need to back away. So yeah, there's a few sort of lessons and insights into diving, the approach I take. It's not sort of specific strategies of, you know, certain mobility exercise or foam rolling or, you know, ice massage. Perhaps a bit of a wider answer, but that was interesting.
No, fantastic. No, that's great, Dave. Really useful, really interesting. Thanks very much for that. A lot of the athletes that we work with in the past and I'm going to be working with in the future, freestyle sports athletes, so they're always throwing their bodies off ramps into midair, doing lots of spinning and rotations like countless times a day, and always very sore, always find it very hard to kind of get fresh, ready to go the next day. So that subject area is kind of an ongoing area of interest for us. So it's always useful to speak to other people about it.
So yeah, listening to you there and having sort of insight or sort of second guessing what goes on is, you know, a lot of these sort of sports training is like play, the sort of structure. It's a fine balance of what you want to do, what the climate environment permits, and then sort of manage and understand that structure and approach. You know, if you don't capture and know what you're doing precisely, it's hard to then tinker and sort of test and measure, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think there's only a certain amount of planning you can do, isn't there? Because every day is different. You can't really predict how the athlete's going to feel. I mean, you could hopefully have a rough idea of where they should feel, but you can never plan too much because things change so quickly.
Absolutely.
So what would you say, if either to the younger you or to, I suppose, a graduate coming out of university now looking to get into the sports science, strength conditioning, pro sport world, what would be your top pieces of advice?
So let's be honest, like the number of graduates coming out of university systems is phenomenal, and the competitiveness, therefore the opportunities that are available are quite limited. So my advice would be to really drive that path and back yourself and seek opportunities and be humble and don't chase the money immediately, as we talked about earlier. But what I also say is be broader with your aspiration and ambition. That reflects my own journey, of course, and my recent experiences and the things I enjoy. But I'm hoping to talk at the UK FCA conference this summer and do an oral presentation. And the title of that I've submitted just a couple of days ago was S&C is More Than Faster, Higher, Stronger. A justification for a broader recognition for the role of the S&C coach. And this is in recognition of two things. Firstly, the industry is pretty saturated with S&C coaches coming out of degree programs looking for a foothold in a club or in an organisation in a professional environment. That's the one side of the coin. The other side is that people who don't play sport are pretty messed up physically, mentally, emotionally. You know, the world's a pretty shitty place, and you know, we've got obesogenic disorders, we've got a growing population of older adults, we've got young kids who are, you know, having a terrible time mentally, and we know that good coaching can help all of these people in slightly different ways, and the principles of good coaching we've talked about can make people healthier, happier, fitter, stronger, have a better social experience. So my advice would be, back yourself in the sporting and profession and chase that. Also have a broader recognition of the role of the coach and the opportunities that may face us in the future as the world turns its head towards strength and conditioning coaching and where it can be applied, and that's in a much wider context than the sporting arena. If we look at Exos and what they're doing now, it's a great example that Exos, were previously Athlete Performance with Bert McMillan leading the way, delivering combine camps and training in the States. Exos is now still doing that, but they're also training health and wellness clients in corporate businesses. In fact, they deliver the majority of corporate well-being programs to the Fortune 500 companies, including Google, Facebook, etc. Some things to think about there for anyone looking at carrying on a path as a strength and conditioning coach, and what they might find opportunities and therefore financial reward and a secure job, satisfaction and enjoyment. That would be my advice. Again, perhaps a little bit conflicting to what some of the other guys you've interviewed have said.
Fantastic. Yeah, we're big fans of Exos, and I had the pleasure of doing some seminars and being at conferences with Mark Verstegen and Nick Winkelmann many years ago, and yeah, their approaches and to how they go about everything, whether it's with elite performance or you know, health and wellness, has always been high end and always been like the forefront of research. So yeah, that they're great people to follow if people aren't aware of those. But you know, great insights, Dave. I really appreciate that. It's sometimes not just about sports performance. We have to look at the person as an individual and what their everyday experiences are in life, because I think it's easy to forget. And also, athletes, whether they're amateur or elite, they are human at the end of the day. So they still go through all of the same problems and challenges that everyone else does. And I think it's easy to forget that sometimes. So thanks for all your insights and honesty with everything we've spoken about. If people wanted to get in touch with you as a follow-up, Dave, what would be the best way for them to do that?
As I said earlier, I'm keen on Twitter. My handle is at DW Hembro. That's DWHEMBRO. So you can find me on Twitter. And I do have a Alan Barbell Twitter site, Alan Barbell website, which is www.alanbarbell.com. All of those platforms, people can get me through. So yeah, if there's anyone listening with any questions or wants to come and see us in Sheffield, they're more than welcome to get in touch in those ways.
We're in start of May 2019. What things have you got coming up over the next couple of months towards the summer?
So summer's a good time for me. University land, by the time you get to April, you start talking about summer, which is nice. But we've got promotion and the recruitment for the strength and conditioning masters, where we've got our first cohort in September. We've got some material to design and develop for that too. But I'm really stoked, excited to be one of the co-course leaders for that course. So that's going to give me a busy summer. We're growing our programs at Alan Barbell. The program currently delivered in just a couple of spaces in and around Sheffield Hallam University. But by the end of 2019, we're going to take that into other spaces, different leisure centres and facilities in Sheffield and schools. So we're taking that up and out from a them to us to a us to them model. So there are a couple of big things. I've got a 9-month-old daughter who starts nursery in a couple of months, and a wife who's going back to work. So that's going to take up a lot of time and attention to make sure that they have smooth transitions with the changes that they've got going on. So family first, and then Sheffield Hallam, Hallam Barbell second.
Brilliant. Well, best of luck with all of that, Dave, and I hope to see you soon and catch up with you soon, when and wherever that may be. Unfortunately, I can't make it to the UKSCA conference this year because I've got to go to a very close friend's wedding, but I'll be listening to all of the follow-up info and reviews with open eyes and ears after that's happened. But thanks very much for your time today, and please stay on the line and we'll wrap up afterwards, but yeah. Thanks very much for coming on, and speak soon.
No problem. Absolute pleasure. Thanks. Thanks for hosting me.
Thanks for listening to the 17th episode. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please leave us a rating and/or review on whichever platform you're listening on. Please check out our website www.extremesportsperformance.com. On our media page, we have weekly blogs that include Thought of the Week, Exercise of the Week, Recipe of the Week, and Training Song of the Week. Each month's collection gets compiled into our monthly newsletter along with company service and store updates. You can sign up for free to receive this via our subscribe page. Our online store consists of training programs, online and in-person coaching, nutrition plans, toolbox, and interactive training systems. Please follow us on our social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Links to these can be found at the bottom of every page on our website or via any search engine. That's all for now. Until next time, take care.